The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Before we get started, a quick public service announcement from your friends at Dietary Requirements. We need your support to continue doing what we do. So we've launched a brand new initiative called the Spinoff Members. This will support the hiring of more journalists, facilitate the most important and hard-to-fund journalism, and allow you to help us decide the areas of coverage. For more info and to become a member, visit thespinoff.co.nz/members. Tēnā koutou katoa. Welcome to Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's award-winning food podcast. Each month, we get together to eat and drink delicious things and chat to the buzziest people in New Zealand food. Welcome to episode 3 of season 2. Ko Simon Day, toko ingoa, and today I'm joined by Alice Neville, the Spinoff's food editor.
Kia ora, Simon.
Kia ora, Alice. And big boss, food entrepreneur, Sophie Gilmore of Delicious Business.
You're just amping it up every episode. Hi, Simon.
Have you had any weird pregnancy cravings?
I'm eating a lot of dairy products at the moment, really into yogurt and
just ice rubbing
cream.
It in, aren't you?
That's appropriate
for my week.
For this week, as we'll be talking about climate change.
Exactly.
But we wouldn't be here without our wonderful sponsors, Freedom Farms. Freedom Farms believes that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how that animal has been raised. They're dedicated to providing you with the best pork and free-range eggs, so you should buy their bacon and buy their eggs. This week, the Spinoff is participating in Covering Climate Now. It's a worldwide initiative aimed at strengthening the media's focus on climate change in the lead-up to the United Nations Climate Summit on September 23rd. It's led by the Columbia Journalism Review, and hundreds of media organizations around the world are taking part, including some of the biggest and most important, and some of the most well-known in New Zealand as well. So this month, Dietary Requirements is also focused on climate change and the way that what we eat contributes to what happens in our planet. Because the world's food system is responsible for about one quarter of the greenhouse gas emissions that humans generate. That includes the emissions from raising animals and growing plants. So beef farming has a carbon footprint, and so does growing kale. But not all food is created equal. There's a really helpful and interesting interactive tool produced by the New York Times. And according to that, meat and dairy, as we well know, particularly cows, have the largest impact on climate change. Annually, livestock accounts for about 14.5% of the world's greenhouse gases. That's about the same as the emissions from all the cars, trucks, planes, and ships in the world combined, which is way more than I expected. In general, beef and lamb have the biggest climate footprint per gram of protein, while plant-based foods tend to have the smallest impact. Pork and chicken, they sit somewhere in the middle. So to acknowledge Covering Climate Change Now, this week a gang of the Spinoff staff, including Alice, have tried to stick to a vegan diet. I call them a gang because they've become quite militant about it and have started trying to shame us humble omnivores.
It's part and parcel of veganism, isn't
yeah.
it?
I disagree. I am shaming Simon because I think you feel quite threatened by veganism, so I'm making sure I, you know,
make it known.
Make
Good
it known.
Were you down at St. Luke's supermarket?
No,
protesting?
That wasn't me. I wouldn't quite take it that far. I'm only vegan for a week, so I'd be fairly hypocritical if I was at the supermarket protesting.
You're well placed to take the extra step, though, as a vegetarian.
It's been, pescatarian.
Yeah,
but,
sorry.
She has to correct us every month.
Well, you know, because otherwise people might hate on me even more. It's been fine. Like, I'm not, I do really, really, really like dairy products and cheese especially.
Right.
So I do miss them. I miss having normal milk in my flat white of a morning because, I don't know, oat milk's okay, almond milk's not. But yeah, it's been pretty good. But I think it's been harder for people like Tina, lovely Tina, our producer, who is a carnivore. But she's doing so well, an omnivore. So it's been a very interesting experiment, and you can read about it on the spinoff.co.nz.
Can I ask if you feel more compelled to tell people about your diet now that you're vegan?
Probably, yes.
Yeah.
She's written about it on a website.
I guess because
that's your job and it's the, you know, this week. But in general, do you feel that it's becomes a part of your vernacular?
Well, it's probably hard to, I think any sort of experiment for a week.
It's topical, yeah. It's topical. It's difficult to say, isn't it?
But I'm not really, I feel kind of, but you kind of have to sometimes, which is.
Like divulge if you're in a restaurant or something. But I'm pleased to hear that you guys are just among the rest of the vegans, letting everyone know what you're up to.
Oh, yeah, totally. I think vegans are a bit maligned because the very vocal ones to whom you refer, the ones that people just equate to all vegans, but actually I think most vegans are just normal people who you might not know are vegan.
So joining us today, where they're sitting very quietly and patiently, Sophie, so I'll introduce them. Joining us today, Tim, to discuss climate change and alternative diets are John Hart, who's a cricket farmer,
hello,
a sheep and beef farmer, and a former Green Party candidate. Nice to have you, John. Thank you for joining us.
Great CV.
Great to be here.
It's a very strong CV. And we have Chris Peterson, the sales and marketing manager for Rebel Bakehouse, how do you describe what Rebel Bakehouse is?
Well, first off, g'day. My CV's not quite as long as John's, but I'll get there. So basically, we're a company. We're 75 years old. We've been making white sliced bread for 75 years. People are now looking for different alternatives when they come to their carbohydrates. So Rebel Bakehouse is our reimagining. It's not really a word, but
it is now.
It is now.
Taking it back.
Tweaking the baking category and trying to sort of improve it by adding new ingredients that are A, sustainable, and B, really good for your people who are eating it, and C, taste delicious. And wraps is where we started. As people walk down the bread aisle, wraps are usually thought of as a healthy option. Most of them are basically the same as a slice of bread that's just been squished out.
Yeah.
So
I've always found that quite interesting, the perception of being reasonably carb-free.
If you look at the package, I suppose when you look at it, it's a bit thinner. So in your mind, it's smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Gram-wise, it's actually a lot bigger than a slice of bread.
Yeah.
And on the packaging, there's always some nice salad. They do a good job of sending that image across, but if you actually look at the nips on the back, they're usually pretty average.
Yeah.
So you're making your wraps with cricket flour?
Yep.
Hemp flour. Yep.
We use a purple corn in one of them, and we use a spinach in another one. So.
And you use John to provide your crickets?
We do.
Is there anyone else in New Zealand farming crickets?
There are some people who are farming insects on a smaller scale, but as far as we know, we're the first one to do it at sort of commercial scale for a mainstream product.
And what makes crickets a special source of protein?
Oh, how long have we got?
Ages. Run us through it. The long version, please.
So basically, they're a really efficient converter of feed into protein. So when you dry the crickets out and turn them into a flour for baked goods, they're basically 62% protein. So they're really high in protein.
Wow.
And they're only about 5% carbohydrate. So they're actually kind of keto perfect out of the box, if you like.
Yes. Mm. Okay, great.
And you raise sheep and beef as well as, you call it growing crickets? What's the right verb for cricket farming?
Good question. I mean, I suppose we call it farming. I mean, we breed them, we raise them, we end their life like any other livestock. So I
how
guess
do you
it's,
kill a cricket?
It's farming, I guess.
Yeah, I'd like to know just how what it looks like. How do you farm crickets? I'm imagining like these little crickets on tiny pastures, you know.
See, I had, I had in my mind an aviary.
I'm thinking vertically in like boxes inside a container.
You're much closer. Yeah,
thank
yeah.
Well,
we'll deal with the hard one first because basically end of life for crickets is we put them in a sealed container and we flush it with nitrogen gas.
Yeah.
And then within a few seconds, they're unconscious. And then within about 10, 15 minutes, they're dead. So it's very quick and very humane.
Right.
You can also freeze them as well, which puts them into hibernation. And then they don't wake up if you keep them frozen for long enough.
Oh, but how long could you freeze them and then defrost them and they would wake up?
Yeah, people have figured that out the hard way. you can actually keep them frozen for a few hours and they'll come back when you defrost them.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. How do you feel about crickets? You know how, like, you know, bees are lauded at the moment for being just epic, and the more you read about them, the more you're like, wow, bees are amazing.
And then you have that relationship with animals like dogs, where New Zealanders find it really hard to imagine ever eating them because of that bond that we have. Crickets fit somewhere really...
How does a cricket farmer feel about his crickets?
It's like any farmer. You actually get quite attached to your livestock.
Oh. Yeah.
And they're kind of, they're quite endearing when you spend a lot of time with them because they walk on you and they chirp and they're quite... I wouldn't say friendly because that's kind of a little bit too far, but they're quite pleasant to be around.
Are they sentient?
Do they have personalities? Do you name them?
I haven't noticed anything that sort of deep, but...
Little Jimmy has a great sense of humor.
They definitely get... They get used to you, though, because they're in the container for about... in the farm for about 6-7 weeks.
Yeah.
And over that time, they actually get more tame. They get more and more used to you being around.
Okay.
So they definitely have a, you know, some sort of capacity for learning and yeah.
Wow.
And what does the space look like? What is a cricket farm? How big is it? Is it outside? I've got no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's an indoor farm, so it can be, the form of it can be almost anything and anywhere. But our particular cricket farm is set up as a pilot facility, a test facility. So it's inside a 40-foot shipping container. We've actually got two now. And so on the inside, it looks like a data center. It's white and shiny with lots of LED lights and ventilation and... yeah, it looks much more like a hydroponic farm or a data center than what you think of as a farm outside.
And how large is your flock?
Flock? what is a group of crickets called?
I'm going to have to do some more homework. I actually haven't thought about that. Yeah.
Hilarious.
There will be a collective noun, and hopefully it's not something too embarrassing to say. we've got anywhere up to about 500,000 crickets at any one time in our farm.
Oh, this is quite cool. It's an orchestra of crickets.
That's actually really appropriate. When you hear them all chirping, that's definitely...
Half a million chirping at once.
Wow, how big are
they? Well, not
all.
They only chirp when they're mature. So they're at all different stages in the life cycle.
They sort of sell themselves out, right? They
pretty much.
And that means they're ready to be eaten.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. One day they're going to learn. They're going to go, shh, he's coming. Stop chirping.
Yeah. Wow, that's so awesome.
What do you feed them?
So we have our proprietary feed that we give them, which is based on a bunch of stuff. Being based at a bakery, we're looking at using recycled bread as well from sort of spare from production.
Very
so that's
clever.
the next project for us.
Close the loop. Mm. But then are they cannibals? Or would you not feed them the cricket wraps?
No, we wouldn't feed them cricket wraps. Okay. No, they don't get recycled. They're too valuable.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah. And where are you feeding crickets? Like they're in the wraps? Are you serving them as whole... crickets?
We've just launched a food service model now, so we're selling crickets to restaurants that want them. And unsurprisingly, the Mexican restaurants are the ones.
I was going to say, yeah.
They're like, yeah, well, there's no convincing required. They know what they want. So
crickets feature in a Mexican diet?
Oh yeah, like all over Mexico, in the markets. There are just loads and loads and like huge baskets full of them at the markets, and people just pretty much go along and scoop them up like you would rice and put them in a bag.
So for making tortilla or for eating?
Just eating like popcorn. Yeah. My brother-in-law's Mexican and he just can't believe he can't buy crickets. Like it's like potato chips to them.
Wow.
And they'll just get crickets with a little bit of chili powder or something.
And bang, are they like fried or?
Dried.
Dried. Ah, cool.
Because I'd imagine in the lead up to the record today, eating crickets like you eat those small prawns, and they've been sort of light batter, quickly deep fried.
Oh, like Australian school, what are they called?
The tiny prawns?
Little prawns?
Yeah. A little bit bigger, like we had at Mekong Baby.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We did that for one of our launch events. They sort of tempura battered it They were really good. They taste like pork crackling, sort of.
Yeah, they were really good. I've actually got some bacon-flavoured crickets here for us to try as well.
Do you flavour them with bacon or with bacon flavour?
Bacon flavour. So they're technically vegetarian-friendly. Obviously not vegan because they're insects. But
So are like you, liquid smoke.
Are you able to put a...
on my vegan...
Like a window over your veganism?
Yeah, I think because we're doing this for climate change, I think crickets is a good... way to go.
It's always an interesting discussion, though, about like if you're vegan because you don't want to see insects killed.
Yeah.
You have to think about how many insects are killed in the service of your plant-based diet.
Yeah,
because farmers are killing insects all the time and mice all the time.
I never think about that.
It's an interesting...
So you could argue if you're eating crickets
that
are
farmed
directly, you're actually saving the insects that are being killed in the paddocks to grow your quinoa. It's like it's complicated.
It is.
It really is.
Because the one thing I wanted to talk to you about is for 2 years I was a self-righteous climate change vegetarian and
I witnessed that.
Didn't want to eat meat because I thought... The land available to use to create produce is a lot more efficient to use it to grow fruit and vegetables. As an organic farmer, you are held to standards that mean you have
less
certain animals per square meter.
It's more about the inputs that you, as long as you can, farm with those inputs, there's not really a strict definition on how many cows per hectare or how many sheep per hectare. It's more about their care and the land's care.
That's because interesting, because with chickens there is, with organic chickens.
Yeah, I think there has to be, because otherwise you just get a bit nuts. Because like indoor chickens, even free-range chickens, they get pretty bunched in.
Yeah.
And it's just a commercial model. They just keep putting more and more in one space. Yeah.
Because that's one thing I thought about was chickens are a great source of protein and a really efficient way of turning chickens into protein that we can eat is by battery farming them. And I wondered if the future of food and the future of humanity literally might look like a chicken farm that kind of looks like a cricket farm in a container with LED lights and just...
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Scary thought.
What's the difference? Yeah. I don't
well,
know.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, if you've got sentient creatures, putting them in that sort of environment's probably not that great.
Yeah, I was thinking it's probably to do with the level of knowledge that we have about those particular creatures, because we know that chickens go nuts when they're in that battery confinement, which is why they, because if they don't have any scratchings, they just start scratching themselves and scratching each other, and it's an unnatural process. But I can see how with crickets it works well.
And I guess the question is, though, is forcing chickens to have a life like that in order to prevent sort of climate wars and drastic apocalyptic climate change, is it a good thing? I don't know. I want to eat some crickets.
Do you mean because chickens are less of a threat to climate change than beef?
Yes.
Oh, like if we cancelled out beef,
you can grow chickens to create quite efficient protein. Not as efficient as crickets. Maybe we just eat crickets instead of persecuting chickens.
Well, that was going to be my totally non-biased suggestion, was that... The greenhouse gas emissions from cricket production are
they look very
minuscule
much like
compared to other forms of protein, even plant-based.
Like, so what are the emissions?
Just zero methane and a very small amount of carbon dioxide.
Okay.
But you've also got to look at the feed where it's coming from as well. So there's a bit of a life cycle thing to look at. But, in terms of the actual animals themselves.
I'm nervous for some reason about eating these. I think
should I Google if it's okay for a pregnant – or hopefully you guys know. Can pregnant women eat – crickets?
Yeah.
I don't stick to any of those rules anyway. I was more meaning I'm nervous because it's a cricket.
Can pregnant women have 3 beers on a Friday?
Yeah. Absolutely they can. Just once.
The only thing we've really found is shellfish allergy. Some people who have shellfish allergy might be potentially allergic, but
to the shell itself.
Yeah, there's something similar in the cricket shell. So those are the plain ones you've got there.
Okay.
And we've also got salt and vinegar and bacon flavor.
I love
just
salt
for
and
fun.
Vinegar.
Yes. Should we eat them at the same time?
Do it right up by the mic because it's really crunchy.
So we usually avoid chewing on the mic, but in this situation I think it'll actually
be... It's important.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going salt and vinegar. Who's with me?
I'm going natural.
That's bacon. Oh,
okay. You're going to fall off the
wagon. No, but it's not bacon. It's vegetarian.
This is your chance to eat bacon.
Oh, yeah. It's just bacon flavour.
Okay. Yeah.
What should we expect? I'm nervous.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, it's delicious.
Kind of just like
very
a...
very nutty.
Mmm.
I was thinking it tastes like a seed.
Sunflower seed.
Sunflower seed or a...
I'm a fan. Would eat.
Would eat salt and vinegar.
I can imagine, like,
what is the plain
watching sport, eating these by the gigantic bowl load.
Yeah. The plain ones.
I have one.
Oh, yeah. Even the plain ones, they're really nutty and toasty and umami kind of flavour.
Better than I thought.
They're really nice.
Oh, my gosh.
Tina, come have some.
Great.
Come on, Tina.
Tina's wigging out.
Okay. I'm going to have the plain one and then the bacon. What was your favourite, Simon?
Just having the salt and vinegar now.
Oh, yeah, chuck me an S&V.
Which is delicious.
It's weird because looking at them is like, oh, God. But then it's just like, yeah, a chip or something.
Mm. I've never eaten an animal or insect that looks so much like the actual thing. You know, this is like putting a whole cow in your mouth. Just small
but if you scaled it up to the size of a prawn, it wouldn't look all that different.
Yeah,
from a
very
prawn.
True. That I hadn't actually thought of.
And I've always found prawns a bit weird as a kind of an innate vegetarian. Like, I've never liked meat.
Right.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because what are these things that we tell ourselves? Why we can eat some things and why we shouldn't eat others?
Yeah.
I think that does, to me, that looks like a creepy crawly bug, which is the only reason that I would have any hesitation. But you're right. Mm. It just looks like a prawn.
Yeah.
I mean, my mum used to eat tripe. And I'd look at her and go, are you mad?
What is tripe again?
Cow's intestine.
The intestine.
The stomach,
It's like, you know, the thing that looks like sea life almost.
But there's about 2 billion people in the world that eat insects all the time.
Wow. Well, and Chinese people eat tripe on the daily.
Apparently my granddad used to make my grandma cut the heads off whitebait because he didn't like the little eyes looking.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, lots of people are funny about whitebait.
He died.
Like, I feel like topping and tailing beans is annoying, like trimming the heads off whitebait.
So he's either getting your long-suffering wife to do it.
Oh, I just love whitebait. Couldn't possibly waste a bit of it.
Mm. Eating the whole beast is a really interesting thing. I remember being on a train in China and people were gnawing on a pig's trotter like it was almost like it was an ice cream. It was like had a little wrap at the bottom like a cone holder. It was...
Yeah, it was, I mean...
But I really respect that. That's what we should be doing. But our silly developed humans' brains...
Well, the
find
sort of
really
Anglo world is very weird with our approach to, like, our disconnect between animals and the...
That's what I was meaning. It's just like, why do you tell yourself that one thing is normal to eat and another isn't? And, like, my dad would love kidneys and toast and eat quite a lot of offal and grew up with it.
Mm.
For whatever reason, I just don't lean that way. Yeah. But
these ones remind me of cheese and bacon...
Shapes.
Yes. Oh my God. I was just thinking that was reminding me of some sort of confectionery, like out of a box. But you know what I think is interesting is that I didn't really like the plain one because I think I got myself got in my head, but I really enjoyed the other two.
I didn't like
so maybe
plain
I just need a bit of distraction from what I'm actually eating.
Yeah.
But if it was wrapped up in, say, a soft tortilla with salad, it was just crunchiness.
Yeah.
Then it's just
delicious.
Like, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. My name's Jeremy Hansen, and I'm the host of The Good Citizen, a spin-off podcast where we talk about great ideas in architecture and urban design with a range of fascinating guests. Find us on your favourite podcast provider and join us in the conversation about how to make Aotearoa's cities the best they can be.
How many crickets, because you know, talk about them being a really dense source of protein, is a chicken breast, say?
Good question. I mean, those are 60% protein, and chicken breast is about 20-25% protein. So you'd need about a third, I guess, of the weight of chicken breast.
Because I feel like this is going to be great. Crickets are going to be great for my rig.
Yeah, totally.
You missed out on your Nando's chicken today, but you're making up for it with protein.
Exactly. So we get Nando's.
That'd be a great snack on your
office.
Cricket podcast, too.
There's a pun there. We get Nando's into the office every week. Love you, Nando, sponsor of The Real Pod. Everyone should listen to The Real Pod. But this week, the militant vegans intercepted the order and it became a vegan Nando's.
Yeah, it was
order.
Vegan Nando's.
Chicken-free Nando's.
I didn't realise that my sister owns Burger Burger and they have a whole...
Didn't know that.
No, I knew that. I didn't realise that they do vegan mayonnaise. And my mum sometimes works there on the door as a host. And she said, all these people are asking for this bloody vegan mayonnaise and telling me that we make this amazing vegan mayonnaise. I had no idea what they were talking about. Yeah. So, yeah, it's obviously just becoming reasonably mainstream.
There's a lot, definitely a lot more people were becoming vegan, I have noticed.
Yeah.
So
I think it'll be
week.
Much easier to be a vegetarian now. When I was
it's definitely,
a vegetarian, I ended up tapping out because...
There are some situations where you're just not catered for at all.
Well, I got told that people would stop inviting me over to dinner because I was annoying.
Honestly, even in the last
That's
5 years...
That's your personality,
years,
Simon.
It's got so much better. And it, like when I started working in, as a food writer, a vegetarian, like people were just like, "You, it's just not going to work, Alice." Yeah, and like I had to sort of keep it quiet when I worked at Cuisine. But now it's like totally normal.
Well, and good on
still,
you.
Now I mean, I feel still like there's people who think it's ridiculous, but, you know.
But I think that makes you stronger than the rest of us. Like, for you, you're innately vegetarian, so it's not difficult for you to resist. But for me to stop eating all animal product would be an enormous shift to what I'm used to doing.
Yeah, so I mean, I wish that I liked meat. It would make my life a lot easier, but I just don't.
My biggest problem as a vegetarian was how much I missed cooking the meat. So if I had like 3 people that I was living with at the time, it would have been maybe okay because I could have cooked for them.
I was living with you at the time.
And did I keep cooking meat?
Yeah.
See? Like that was the thing that I just missed being able to work with that protein.
Yeah.
But having things like crickets come in is a really fun thing to experiment with, to test different recipes on.
What's your favourite way to eat them?
Personally, I do eat them in the wrap.
Yeah.
Product placement.
Yeah, exactly. The Rebel Bakehouse wraps. But just as they are here, just dry with a beer watching the rugby.
Yeah. And how has your local community picked up the cricket?
It's quite interesting. I suppose I'm the generation that, I'll give that a go. And everyone here dipped straight in and tried it.
Yeah.
But there's a group of people like... I'd say probably a third of people who just flat out will not look at it.
Won't even try it.
Not even try it, not even touch it, not want anything to do with it.
Because to judge the Wairarapa, it is a demographic that I think of when I see New Zealanders who are like 3 meat and veg sort of.
It's a traditional area.
Yeah,
definitely. But in saying that, there are a lot of people open to it. But yeah, you definitely get not just where we are, like when I go to my family and stuff, at least one third of the people in any situation I'm in.
We'll not even try it. That's fascinating to me.
Just an instant reaction. It's like, wow. Before you even present,
Just the idea of bugs.
I can imagine several members of my immediate family not trying them. I don't reckon my mum would.
I was just thinking that, actually. I don't think my mum would either.
Your mum wouldn't because she's like, would just make a point about it.
Yeah.
It would be she'd be happy to eat them, but she wouldn't because it would affect her brand perception.
She always says I'd rather die than eat a raw oyster. So she won't she doesn't like oysters and won't eat them. Even when I'm like, this is cold, it's delicious, it's got mignonette all over it, you've got to get it. She's just like, definitely not eating it.
Wow.
How long have you been farming, John, the crickets?
We started the first tests about a year ago, so it's come on pretty quick.
How have you seen the growth pattern?
Of the farming itself?
Yeah, do you have clients other than the bakehouse?
No, so basically the farm is part of Rebel Bakehouse, so it's our farm effectively.
Are you allowed to, or have you explored the idea of, because I would literally want to buy a pack of those for the game on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, we've got other products in the pipeline in terms of whole crickets, flavoured crickets, other products, including crickets. So, yeah, it's just seeing what's the biggest priority for what's next.
Yeah, I mean, we have a pretty long pipeline of new products coming out, but again, it's making sure we target where we are actually going to sell product rather than spend all this time and money and then 3 people buy them, you know.
Is there a sustainable explanation behind why hemp?
Yes, flour? There is. It's... Again, it's very similar to crickets. There's so many positives. I'm not an expert in hemp, but I could put you in touch with someone who is. But basically
met the 2 guys from Hawke's Bay that were making oil.
Yep, so they're one of our guys. But so the inputs are basically half. So you use hardly any herbicides and stuff. You don't need to use as much water. You need less land. It's really good for the land, so it enriches the soil as it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
It also removes toxins from the soil, so they use it a lot near factories and stuff to clean up soil and then throw it out.
Okay.
It's just so many of those sort of things. And then what you get out of it, really high in omegas, really high protein, really high fiber. So again, it's a really good product that we should have been growing for years, but
yeah.
we're only sort of slowly moving to
last year, wasn't
well,
it?
Same
November.
As yeah. perception around vegans is there's a yeah. perception around hemp as well, and that's affected our.
The yeah. oil's really delicious, though. Like really
tastes
nice.
Like and seeds are nutty.
Tastes really
oil
nutty.
Mm. But yeah. I think seeds are nice. I've got scents. I've been sprinkling them on stuff, especially in Good and Vegan Week because they're so
like,
high in protein.
Kind of miniature cashew nuts.
They're yeah, really they're yum.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's a bit of a creamy kind of flavour to them, isn't there?
Yeah, they're really good. But again, I think hemp is something that a lot of people are more open to.
Yes.
So just sales of our wraps, hemp. Outsells cricket 4-1.
That was going
to
be my next question.
Doesn't have the creamy
sure cricket.
Yeah, and it's something people have heard about. People know, you know, there's so much media about it that people sort of innately know the benefits. Whereas a lot of people say cricket, why would you eat cricket? So we sort of have to get out there and educate people around what we can actually do.
And that's
it.
Interesting, isn't it? Because if customer or consumer awareness of hemp is 4 times that of cricket, then you've only got a year or so before.
Hopefully,
you know, if you've got some big PR spend. Yeah. But I can imagine that cricket's the slowest moving of the SKUs. But is it? Are they sold in supermarkets? Are they
yep.
sold? Who's your biggest mover of cricket wraps?
So Pack and Saves and New Worlds are really good, and they've been really supportive. So yeah, head there to get them. But we're starting to get into more food service. So you're starting to see sort of cafes and that sort of thing take them up, and I think that's probably where we will sell a lot of them.
I wonder if it'd be like one of those things where there was a Daily Mail uproar about UK butchers having halal meat without telling people that it was halal, which to me is fucking stupid. I wonder if it would be the same if you were served a wrap wrapped in crickets but weren't told about it, whether that would
potentially
upset
on our Facebook feed. We've had quite a few people, you know, give their kids cricket wraps without telling them, or give their family.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's always been like a positive, oh, ha, ha, that was actually really
people
good.
People are always trying to hide stuff in their kids'
kids. Exactly, exactly. We haven't had any sort of negative things or anyone get an allergic reaction and die or anything like that. So,
when we launched the local newspaper, the Wairarapa Times Age, had a big front page, was it? Local company releases crickets in supermarkets. And it was
hilarious.
Shock horror.
Yeah.
Great headline.
That is quite
like snakes on a plane, but crickets in a supermarket. and then can I just ask one more question about these? So do you, is your intention to basically get cricket flour into the mainstream?
Yep.
And to do that via the wraps, to get people eating them and enjoying them and talking about them.
Exactly.
And then move through your range.
Exactly, and just see it as a way to enrich existing products rather than, it doesn't have to be this big scary thing that we're trying to convince everyone to do. It's simply something
put
you
it with
can
something
use
they know.
To enrich your cooking, enrich your baking, or enrich existing baked products that just up the protein, up the everything.
So are those wraps made solely from cricket flour? Or
no.
I was going to say, what is the ingredients in cricket flour? Is it literally just ground?
It's
cricket.
Yeah.
So you have to put that with other flour.
Yeah. Flour is almost a misnomer because it's really more of a high protein powder that supplements food.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really behave like wheat flour. You can't just swap it out one for one.
Yeah.
So it's an additive, not a complete replacement.
Have you made things like cricket sourdough?
We've tried a lot of things.
Yeah. Cricket croissant.
We haven't gone that far yet, but sort of breads, rolls, buns, all that sort of thing.
What's failed drastically?
Nothing, to tell you the truth.
So it doesn't really react with the gluten in a normal flour either. So you could just add it in, like put a teaspoon into your smoothie, put it in with your normal bread dough, and it's not.
It's just in there. Mm. Yep, it just happens to be there and you eat it.
Yeah, it seems like it's pretty versatile in that way.
Yeah, definitely. I think the key is you don't want to put too much in. Because then it starts, you start overriding the natural ability of the product to do what it's doing. But
But I've seen chicken breast encrusted with cricket flour on top. And that was like any other sort of rub or crust you'd put on meat.
Oh, is it quite coarse, like a crumb?
No, it's quite fine, but you can mix it with other stuff as well.
Okay.
But even like chuck what we've got in front of us in a mortar and pestle, and you'll make a panko bread cricket. Mm. cricket crumb.
The crunchiness is appealing. It's
because they're only about 2% moisture. They're very, very dry when they're roasted. So a quick blitz in the blender and it's basically in little tiny pieces.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I can see how it wouldn't actually mess with your regular ingredients in the scientific sense when you were adding it to other ingredients.
Speaking of my rig, have people done like protein powder from crickets?
I mean, basically, the cricket flour is essentially protein powder. I mean, it's 60% protein when you grind it up. So
I have seen some stuff overseas. Yeah. A lot of incorporated in protein bars and that sort of thing, which is where we'll be looking ahead. But yeah, we've had a few inquiries locally as well. So
how does that compare to? I mean, I don't know how much you've looked into this, to regular pea protein or.
I haven't looked a lot into it, to be fair.
Yeah.
Soy flour is about 35-40% protein.
Okay.
And that's kind of the peak. Everything else drops down from there, so 30-20.
Oh, so you'd expect whey and pea and all those other things to be less than protein.
Yeah.
So then it would be a matter of what you mixed the cricket flour with to bring it down to normal.
Yeah, or you mix it to bring the overall protein up of a product.
Yeah. Very so cool,
there's
guys.
There's a whole lot of everyday stuff you could put it into to just make them high protein.
Yeah.
Check this out for a segue. What I think would go really well with the crickets.
That's what I've been trying to say for like 20 minutes.
Is a beer.
Yeah.
What are we drinking today, Alice?
I've chosen Sawmill because they've just got B Corp certification, so which I will tell you about.
That's so awesome. I didn't know that. Yeah. Well done, Sawmill.
Yeah. So I've got their new hazy... 3x2 six-pack of, whoops, I just spilt some, sorry, three different beers, two of each, and they come in a box. And, yeah, there is their East Coast India Pale Ale, which has been out for a while, which I'm a big fan of, a Hazy Pale Ale and a Nelson Sauvin India Pale Ale. So all hazy beers. And B Corp certified, which means it's an international certification.
It just means that your business pays equal attention and there is parity among the priorities for profit, people and planet, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
So it's not means it's good for bees?
No, okay. No, the lesser bee, not the insect.
It says on the press release I got about it, to achieve B Corp status, businesses are assessed on policies and practices across five categories: governance, workforce, customers, community and environment. It's a rigorous certification process that challenges business leaders to reconsider many standard business practices. So it's quite...
There's only about 3,000 of them in the world,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I understand it's quite intense, you know, getting... You can't, it's not just one of those greenwashing, like, oh, yeah, we're really sustainable. So
no, you get heavily audited.
Yeah. So it's cool. And nice beer, too.
It clearly works because it tastes amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make good beer. Old
just
Sawmill.
Becoming more virtuous by drinking it.
Yeah, I feel better
with
already.
A side of crickets and you're away.
This is a delicious. Pretty, you know, climate change free feast right now.
I know. We're doing pretty well, aren't we?
Is the birth of the cricket movement born out of a desire to be more sustainable, or is it to move away from intensive animal farming and provide an alternative, or...?
Yeah, I guess it's probably both of those things, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I got into it because it was an interesting project and no one had done it before. But the more we got into it, the more we realised this thing's got legs, for want of a better pun.
Yeah.
there's a really strong story around sustainability and climate change in a protein source that doesn't require a lot of resources or land or water.
But it's obviously really important tasty. To you as well.
Yeah.
Former Green Party MP. Sitting here with this keg cup.
Not quite. No, that was candidate.
Sorry.
But thanks for the promotion, though.
Just take it.
Ouch.
I was a few off the pace last election, but
yeah. But you know, is it falls in line with your values? Obviously.
Yeah, and I wouldn't do it if I couldn't kind of put hand on heart and say it's something
important
I believe in.
Important to you.
Yeah.
Can you
and
make money
you,
as well?
Yeah. So there's definitely there's a business model profitable. There as well. Yeah, definitely.
How does beef and sheep farming fit in with your principles? Because it's quite interesting. I'm certainly not anti-meat eating, but in my opinion, it should exist, but only in the ways that, you know, that you're doing it, small, low input, that kind of thing. So if everyone was doing, you know, if there was more like that and everyone ate a lot less meat, the world would be good. But is it something you've had to tackle, even like whether... to continue farming beef and sheep?
Yeah, I mean, I'm firmly in the camp that there is a really important place for animals in regenerating land and pasture and even sequestering carbon. So, you know, I think having an animal-free country in terms of agriculture would be a complete disaster because they actually perform a lot of useful functions. But
what are they? Because what animals sequester carbon?
So basically, by growing soil and growing and eating grass, you actually you have if you manage your land well, you can actually grow soil in the grow carbon in the soil. So there's this enormous potential for us to sequester carbon in farming. Partly, it's not really well recognised, so we don't get credit for it. And the other part of it, it's not the practices aren't really well established and well sort of disseminated. But there's a huge potential there for agriculture to actually be, not even what we think of as traditional farming, to be a huge source for sucking up carbon.
Well, you have to wonder whether this is the moment with Fonterra's profits in crisis to reconsider the existing model. You know, for years there are people saying, yes, let's have less intensification, market ourselves as the premium product we are and not be so reactive to what the market is wanting. Let's set our own strategy. And I think that that's really valid. And hopefully that would lead to people eating great quality, ethically farmed, but probably less meat.
Yeah, because organic meat tastes so different. I've been really surprised by the actual taste difference between a $5 steak and a $20 steak from the farmer's market. But I think eating four fewer steaks and that one great one is such the way to go in the way we live, and eating heaps more crickets.
Definitely.
And drinking more B Corp.
The challenge we've got as a country is that we export 90% of the meat we grow.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, almost doesn't matter what Kiwis do in terms of our diet. It's our customers that are the challenge.
I also think that's a widely misunderstood idea is how much we export and how little beautiful New Zealand food stays here for us to eat.
Particularly lamb.
Yeah.
It seems as though most of that goes overseas, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I could get lamb cheaper when I lived in Paris than I can at the supermarket.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I guess that's another thing. Like you're saying, if you're willing to eat meat once a week, spend a bit more on it and enjoy better quality, then there's no reason that lamb shouldn't be in the rotation at home. But instead, everyone's eating. I think New Zealanders eat chicken on average 5 times a week or something.
God.
Like we're just ramming ourselves full of cheap protein.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's a cheap protein. And when you actually see the household incomes of New Zealand, you don't realise how many people need the cheapest possible food
of course.
To fill them up.
No, I understand that. But I mean, you know, if we could teach ourselves and educate ourselves to be more competent, more creative, to utilise the protein and the vegetables that we have in New Zealand, which are beautiful, then the overall bill isn't really affected if we can get people to make the switch. But it's just not the way that we've been raised, is it?
No,
it's a pretty big shift required, I think, in the way people think and, you know.
And it's interesting that it seems to be a gender thing as well. I think that women tend to be more willing to eat vegetarian food. And I think when you get older, the boomers are all saying that they're starting to, as you get older, you become more vegetarian.
I bet more lads will eat the crickets, though.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
I haven't noticed my dad becoming more vegetarian as he gets older.
Yeah, but isn't that interesting that, like...
But then the needs that your body has for protein as you grow older and have less testosterone, it drops as well.
Yeah.
So your desire to go and grab a piece of steak probably drops a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. What I found so interesting is I think being pregnant kind of amplifies things, but it exaggerates your intuitive eating. Like I noticed the other day that I was lower in energy than I normally would be.
Right.
And I thought that's quite interesting. And then I noticed that I put in my supermarket trolley beef because my body was basically saying, give me some more iron. And then I got blood tests back and they said your iron's a bit low.
Yep.
And it's so interesting the way that so basically the baby boomers will be eating less meat because their bodies need it less. But that's a good thing because there's so many of them, right? Jesus, imagine if they were all having meat and 3 veg every night for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Okay, so the other thing we have to eat today is some vegan chocolate chip cookies that I made this morning.
There's been a lot of vegan food brought in and made, and apparently this is the first one that's tasted good, so I'm really proud of you.
The Josie's scrolls were quite good.
I hope Josie doesn't listen to the podcast because I
pretended
really
to like her
I really
scroll.
Disagreed. No, I didn't. I went and hid it in the kitchen. It was bad.
Aww.
I did actually rudely say that I thought vegan baking could be an oxymoron. What goes into chocolate chip cookies if they're vegan?
Because in my last Vegan Week update, which I'm sure you all read, I said that we were having a debate about that, and I said I found most vegan baking a bit shit. And then Josie said it's because so many vegans try to be healthy. You just need to up the fat content.
And up the sugar. Up so the what sugar. Fat do you use without butter?
Coconut oil. Mm. And so someone posted on our Facebook post of the story, being like, totally agree, these cookies are great. And it's on the Tasty website. So it's coconut oil, shitload of sugar.
How do you make vegan chocolate?
And Whittaker's chocolate. Well, just dark chocolate is vegan.
Mm, dairy-free.
Yeah, dairy-free.
Is dark, what percentage? How much dark chocolate is vegan?
Over about 70%.
Over about 70%. Doesn't have milk.
Yeah. Great. Mm. Mm. Here I was having a little vegan snack every night without even realising.
Oh, that's the thing. I think there's still a lot of people don't really understand what vegan is. And like my mum was like, can you eat bread? I'm like, yes.
Just leave out the squirrels, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, maybe she was thinking because some bread doughs have egg in them.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Some. Apparently Best Ugly Bagels has, because they're Montreal-style bagels, they use egg in their bagels, which is sad because I was about to go and get one for lunch the other day.
Have you slipped up this week?
Yeah. My Māori class on Monday night, I ate a Marmite-flavoured bagel crisp that then I looked at the ingredients and it had milk powder in. And then last night at the opening of the Archie Brothers Circus Bar, there were these waffle fries that had, like, mayo or aioli drizzled on them. And I kind of tried to push the mayo off, but...
I hope you tried very hard.
I did try hard.
You're vegan this week.
But other than that, I think I've been doing pretty well. Tina did have a bit more of a slippage last night, but...
This is nice. It doesn't necessarily taste like a chocolate chip cookie to me. Mm. It's like a... nice, sticky, chewy, sugary thing.
Yeah.
Borderline like brownie, there's so much chocolate.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that you don't try and be vegan and save the calories. You can't do it all.
No, fuck that, exactly.
Very into that cookie, though, Alice. I think you should share the recipe as part of the post.
Thank you to the reader, whose name I've forgotten, who shared the recipe with me. It's very good.
I think the sugar tastes almost like a... golden syrup.
I used a muscovado.
Mm. Oh, you did, yeah. Mm.
And white. Mm. A mix.
Great work from you, Alice Nibble, this week.
While we're drinking the woke beer, I had a question about the hazy descriptor.
Didn't we talk about this last week? Last month?
Probably. Tell me
again. I
don't
know what she'll say. She'll say, it doesn't actually mean anything, really.
Well, it's unfiltered, mainly.
Oh, no, we did talk about
it. Cloudy.
Sam was like, oh, but it's a special kind of yeast. And I was like, stop mansplaining, Sam. Didn't really. And it is, sometimes they do use a special kind of yeast, but not always.
And so, East Coast India?
It's East Coast India Pale Ale.
Oh, okay.
And East Coast, well, I mean, hazy pale ales are also known as Nipahs or North... what is it? Northeast. Yeah, because I came from the east, because West Coast...
Of which country?
America. So West Coast is your classic hoppy West Coast style IPA. And then East Coast ones are the more hazy, kind of less bitter, bit fruitier ones.
Good knowledge.
Are these limited edition or are these...
I think it's part of their core range now, this six-pack.
Why are you such a beer aficionado? Oh, because you write for the Air New Zealand magazine.
Because I like beer.
I know, but... you're particularly knowledgeable.
Because I write about it.
Yeah.
Drink a lot about it.
She knows all the answers.
It's chicken and egg, though. Like, I write about cricket, the sport, not the food.
You're a cricket
Because I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
There is only one appropriate snack for all cricket-related events going forward now.
I think that you need to almost approach Jeremy New Zealand Wells. Cricket team. I have a better cricket podcast than Jeremy Wells. Approach me, even. You could sponsor my cricket podcast. But I think the New Zealand cricket team would be an ideal.
That was one of my original marketing strategies I wanted to do with this, was get most of the young guns and have them eating the crickets and doing the cricket raps and stuff. Mm-hmm. But
Jimmy Nation was here the other week. If only we'd had the crickets.
The crickets are black. I mean, it just sells itself, right?
Yeah. And you are literally talking to one of New Zealand's biggest cricket fans, so Simon will make this happen for you. Next time there's one of those World Cups that goes on for about 5 years.
But joking aside, as a higher nutrition kind of sports food, cricket's actually one of those potentially interesting ingredients for muscle building or recovery.
And we have had a couple of nutritionalists from super rugby teams and that sort of thing. talking to us quite closely about using it. So,
well, New Zealand cricket.
Shake. Do you know TJ Pettinutter is vegetarian, moving towards veganism? Okay. He's a great guy.
I love TJ Pettinutter.
Love him so much.
Do you?
Yeah.
Protect Iho Mātou.
He's so woke.
Mm. And he leads the haka too, which is always a nice moment.
He's like my new Piri Wepu. I was obsessed with since before anyone had even heard of Piri Wepu. Before he saved the day.
So we have a unique approach to our regular segments this week. We're going to talk about John and Chris. Usually we talk about the best place we've eaten recently and some tips for cooking. I'm going to ask you what's the best vegan thing you've ever eaten, or to recommend a good vegetarian vegan restaurant. Who wants to go first? Alice, you're the in-house
vegan. I thought it was the best vegan thing I'd eaten this week, not the best thing I've ever eaten.
Well, the best vegan thing I've eaten this week is your cookies. So
yeah, these are pretty good. I haven't actually cooked much this week because I've been either out or my sister invited me round. Yeah, my sister made a nice...
Vegans do get invited for dinner.
Yeah, I think she felt... Well, then my other sister invited me this night, yeah. She made a otolenghi recipe, which was like a bulgur wheat and eggplant thing. That was yum. Best vegan thing I've ever eaten. God, I don't know. Really hard to think. I mean, most curries, unless you get paneer, I suppose ghee. Yeah, fuck, I don't know. That's mine. I'll say the otolenghi recipe.
I have a really great recipe, which is for a Sri Lankan beetroot curry. And we can share it with anyone that's interested. But really beautiful curry. And this sounds really bad because I'm not vegan. It's one of those ones where you don't even realise you're eating something vegan.
Yeah.
And then you feel really great when you work out that you are.
I think that's the best thing, like, look to culinary cultures where it's just, that's just what they eat. It's not like, you know, weird.
Yeah, don't try and adapt things that shouldn't necessarily be vegan.
Was your bird on a wire tofu, black pepper tofu vegan?
Yes.
That was one of the best vegan things I've ever eaten. But also I love the... falafel at Upper Row.
Oh, yeah, that's a good time.
Very good. But
Fatima's has a lot of vegan food and a lot of vegan followers.
Really?
Fans, yeah.
See, I go to Fatima's because the lamb is amazing.
Loads of people order that spiced nut pita, the tofu, all of it. There's lots of vegan food there.
Mm.
You two, do you have any great vegan joints in Masterton?
They're pretty few and far between, actually.
Mm. I'm surprised.
Yeah. We've got some really good Indian and Thai restaurants. That do some of the dishes are vegan. But we used to live in Auckland, and our great kind of regrets is that we don't have a Fatima's anywhere near Masterton. Because we still, their kofta balls and their falafel, just so good.
Sophie's a co-owner.
Oh, there you go.
As of recently.
Very recently,
we need a Masterton branch.
Open a Masterton.
Have you thought about raising your new family in Masterton?
I hadn't thought of that, but thank you.
My sister-in-law took us to a place in Melbourne, Moroccan Soup Bar, I think it's called.
Oh, that's awesome. The Moroccan Soup Kitchen.
I was very hesitant when I went there, but yeah, that sort of changed my mind on a few things. That was amazing.
Is it a vegan place?
Yeah, and she uses like refugee woman as the chefs and stuff.
And you take your own container, and then they do that really cool, I think it's called How to Date a Muslim, and they're trying to break down the barriers between the Muslim community and everyday Australians. So you go along, and there's a Muslim woman up the front, and you can just ask her anything you want.
That's really cool.
Sounds like they're quite fun events.
Yeah.
Do you have vegan cooking tips?
Yes, aquafaba. That's a classic one. That's like magic. So aquafaba is the liquid in a can of chickpeas or beans, which you usually just drain off and chuck out. If you whip it up, it works like egg whites.
Really?
Mm. That's what vegan mayonnaise is.
Yeah.
Oh, buzzy. Because I always think it stinks.
Yeah, it kind of does.
You can add things to flavour it.
Make meringues or whatever.
I feel like it would make me fart as well.
Yeah, probably.
Sophie?
Look, I'm going to say ghee because we've done quite a bit of Indian cooking lately.
No, that's not vegan, right?
Oh, no, it's not. Vegetarian. I don't think I've got a vegan cooking tip. My vegan cooking tip is to go to Wise Boys Burgers because I think they're doing a great job. They're two great young guns.
We hung out with them last week.
We did. We met them. They were nice.
Sustainable Business Network Awards finalist announcement.
I went to, that's where I last hung out with them, was at the Sustainable Business Network Awards last year.
Yeah, so we've been nominated for that too. So
yeah,
we've come up the awards ceremony.
You look a bit too old to be a part of the spin-off's Millennial on a Mission sponsored category.
I fall just into
you would
millennial.
Be a millennial.
Really?
Millennials yes. can I be like up to late.
No, we're actually all millennial, aren't we?
It's 82, isn't it?
Something yeah. like that.
82, 92 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm way out of it. 86. Those days are gone. You're a Gen Y.
No.
No, we, are we Gen Y?
No, Gen yeah. Y are people younger than us. Like, Tina might be a Gen Y, I think. How old are you, Tina?
12.
She can't remember. She's young. 24? She might be a Gen Y.
Gen X.
Yeah, Gen X is you. And then we're Y. And then no. Z are the ones after us.
Oh, yeah.
We're millennials.
Yeah, we're well.
But we're all, but X, no, Y, and sorry. Z are millennials. It's a problem. It kind of like, there's an umbrella yeah. millennial.
Can we stretch it out?
I think Tina's Gen Z. Yeah, we should edit this out.
This
anyway,
is terrible chat.
lots of salt is my vegetarian cooking, vegan cooking tip. Also, wrap beetroot in tinfoil, roast them, and then the skin just peels off.
Yep. Good.
And it's this really succulent, tender, shiny. You miss out on that dirt flavour, which I really like, but sometimes it's not what you need.
Mm. With beetroot, when you boil it too, you should do it before. Don't top and tail it because the shoots trap the flavour. So as well,
you did have
boil
a vegan
the whole thing.
Tip. Well,
take it off at the end. And look at me being all vegan.
I'll get you two to give us some cricket cooking tips.
Ooh. Well, I whipped up these ones last night that you tasted today. The easiest way is to actually put them in a warm pan. Excuse me. Get the crickets nice and warm. Not super hot, but just warm. And then you can spritz them with some release spray, just a bit of canola spray or oil.
Okay.
Get them nice and sort of just lightly coated. And then they'll soak up anything you put on them. So any flavourings or rubs or sauces, they just...
Nice.
And had you dried them first?
Yeah, so these are the whole roasted ones out of stock. We just grab them and
whole
throw them in
the pan. Whole roasted cricket. Yeah. 1 cup of whole roasted cricket. Yeah. Love it.
And then baking-wise, what, 10% replace the flour weight with cricket? And So my wife makes banana muffins, just puts 10% of that in. You would never know. It just tastes like a nutty banana muffin.
Oh, nice.
With super protein. Yeah.
So is that the flavour? Is it does actually bring a bit of nuttiness to the baking as well?
For me personally, I find that.
Yeah.
I immediately got that flavour on the natural
cricket. Yeah, eating it straight, I did too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you can also influence it by how hard you roast them as well. Like I've made some unintentionally that were really toasty and dark, almost sort of porter tasting by just cooking them a bit too hard.
Yeah, yum.
I'm
interested to see what the chefs are going to do with them.
Yeah.
Well, I actually really look forward to being able to order crickets more often at Auckland, more often order them at all at restaurants and get a bag of them at the cricket this summer.
Same.
Hopefully. Ooh. I'll introduce you to the New Zealand cricket team.
Sweet.
They're my close personal
friends. Well, he wishes.
Drive your electric cars this week, eat your crickets, and we'll see you all next month. Thank you both very much for joining us. It was really fun.
Thank you. Keep it up. It's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm really into
really
it.
It's really cool. And thank you, Tina, for your producing.
As always, Tina, you're a fantastic producer.
Yes.
The Spinoff's Climate Now coverage, I have a mouthful of crickets, is actually brought to you by our members program. So you should join that. We'll include a link in the post. But for just $80, you will get a book as well as your annual membership, and I will send you a bag of crickets as well if you've got all
we
the way to this
stop
end.
Swallow the crickets.
Unchewed crickets.
Yeah, the ones he's
not,
chewing
not
right
the
now.
One from my mouth.
Hi. Bye.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.